It's the Stream Leader Report live panel. Creators talking to creators. Raw, real, and unscripted. And sometimes they say the quiet part out loud. Here are your hosts, Claudia Santiago, Rebecca Gunter, Rob Greenlee, and Ross Brand.
Hey, gang. We are back after a couple of weeks away with the Stream Leader Report live panel. I'm Ross Brand. My show is the Stream Leader Report. We have Rebecca Gunter from Business in the Raw, Claudia Santiago, Viva La Stage, and Rob Greenlee from The Trust Factor. And we've got some hot topics today. Going to talk about a couple of apps that, is it safe to use? Should you be using? Or the pros or the cons? Which is more relevant to you as a user? We'll also get into embracing change in business. We'll talk a little bit about Elon Musk promising that he would support creators who lose their jobs financially if they try and challenge their employers because of something that they said on the platform. So we'll get into that, all that. But let's start with Zoom. And Claudia, why don't you tell us what's going on with Zoom and what the issue is there?
Yeah, well, I actually don't really use Zoom. okay, I'll just say that.
So you're safe, in other words.
The only time I actually use it is if I'm invited into a live stream conference or even just a private kind of thing. But honestly, I use other applications that I find work for me best. But the interesting thing is in business, and Zoom is used so much as well. And I can't ignore the fact that one of the entrepreneurs that I do follow, she's a Latina. Her name is Kathy Heller. And she, over the years has really been an advocate of like AI and like all this like crazy tech, right? You know her, Ross, from way back, right? I mean, girlfriend is right in there. So the fact that she started writing about Zoom, I did a double take on that. And I thought, well, what's going on here? So my understanding, you guys correct me if I'm wrong or you have some filler ins here, but my understanding is that Zoom was doing some kind of testing and they changed their terms. And all of a sudden, the terms basically is a bit of a blanket statement at the end of the day saying they can record whatever you're Zooming in private, whatever you're typing in, whatever you're showing, and they can AI that and do whatever the heck they want with it. Is that pretty well it in a nutshell?
Well, it's kind of what the terms of service sound like, but I read that post on Facebook that you shared in our group, and there was a lawyer in there insisting that this is the language that they use, but it's legalese. It doesn't mean, but I tend to take these things as face value. So I don't know what you think, you other guys think, but it did not sound good in terms of like, oh, they could take stuff from our meeting and use it to train their AI language model. Does that then mean that something we said in a meeting, when somebody queries the AI model that they have, is going to come up as an answer? Or I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a can of worms that AI brings with it, is the monitoring and the access to information about all of us. And do we give it permission to have access to that? And I think that is one of the things that Zoom kind of tripped over their toes on with this one, is not clearly understanding how someone on the outside might look at this. They're looking at this purely from covering themselves in the legalese. So when you actually read the terms here, it's giving them full rights to copy or redistribute and to store information that is created or content that's created on their platform. And that opens up all sorts of doors for them to do a lot of different monetization activities. And one of them is AI, right? And while I think it might be helpful for some of us to turn over our meetings to an AI to summarize and to give us output, and to potentially get it in a package that's more usable with the attendees to a particular meeting, it's another issue to not be sensitive to the fact that that information is going into a AI engine that could be queried and searched, and people could be exposed for what they said in a private meeting. And I think that that's where they kind of tripped over themselves on this one a little bit on the privacy topic.
Now, from the way that I read it, it almost sounds like they could take, you know, people live stream from Zoom. They do shows, they do podcasts. It almost mm-hmm. sounds like they could take your podcast and repurpose it for right. any reason whatsoever.
Rebecca, well, and that's the other end of the spectrum too, is that when I read it, I was thinking to myself, well, is Zoom going to be a competitor to YouTube?
Right.
is that where this is going?
Except that we don't know right. that they're putting it out there.
Now, I didn't get a chance to pop this into the comments, this link, but it is on CBS News and it's Tech Talk. Yep. And they're actually talking about this with one of the developers. And I found it like super interesting.
Can you hold it up again?
Yeah, here they are. It's kind of scroll. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, I have it on my screen too. I'm looking at the same article.
Okay, so it's a video. It's actually an interview with one of the developers, and he's talking about it. And I learned a new term today as I found this thing, and I went, oh my gosh. Okay, hang on. Let me see if I can pull up that term, because I started to actually research it a bit, and it's called side channel attacks. He talks about this, and he talks about how keystrokes on any platform, Zoom, anything, or even placing your phone beside a computer, or how these side channel things work, where they can pick up stuff from another person's cell phone, from another, you know, like all this stuff. Like I know with geo, all the geo stuff, we you know, location stuff, mm-hmm. marketing, geo marketing and all that. But he talks about this, and he talks about the side channel things and how Zoom and AI and, so have a listen to it or watch it. I might throw the link in here after we're off.
Yeah.
But it's quite interesting to hear his take.
Yes. So you're saying that if you like all of us probably have our phones fairly close to us here, that the phones could be monitoring what we're saying, right? They could be taking yeah. that information and not necessarily directly from the Zoom platform, but they could be pulling it themselves.
Exactly. Right. So it's right. not just a Zoom thing. So anyway, then he was talking about, because they were, the two interviewers were asking him, okay, well, then there's things like passwords. Okay, like, is that all going to be, you know, they're going to grab? And he said, he had a really cool tip. He said, you know, this is where your shift key is very important. He said, the more you use that shift key, it's another tap on that keyboard, it's harder for them to then scope out your passwords. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Anyways, it all has to do with AI too.
Right.
So in other words, creating passwords where it's not, you're using capitals and lowercase much more than you normally would.
Yeah, this definitely opens up Pandora's box of issues for all of us to consider as we look to the future here is, you know, I've been increasingly having conversations with AI lately. So they are learning from us. There's no question about it. And this is just another example of how that can be used. And I know in the next version of ChatGPT, and I heard an announcement today saying that we can now upload documents directly to ChatGPT. GPT, and it'll take all that information and it will output all sorts of different things from it, right? And it's the same thing that a lot of podcasting AI companies are doing as well. So when you publish an episode, they'll do a breakdown of the summary, and they'll do segment clips, and they'll do, you know, like links into various parts of the content, things like that for you. So it's a convenience trade-off, but you're also, you know, feeding the AI and giving it information.
So once you put your document up into ChatGPT, I don't know how you would say, once you submit it, right, so that it can summarize your, write you a summary of your, you know, 35-page document or whatever it is, can it then pull from that document for anybody who asks a question on that subject matter?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I've been actually playing around with ChatGPT-4 here recently. I uploaded my resume to it just to see if it would learn from that and then give me output. So like this whole thing that many people have been doing for a long time with Google is doing these vanity searches, right? And to see what information is in the database about, you know, me or you or whoever. And so I was feeding it, trying to get it to, if I could see whether it was learning from my resume, right? And it did. So, when you upload to it, I don't know if it only gives me that information, because I can only see the queries that I make in chat, you know, GPT.
But, right.
I'm assuming that if anybody else did a query on my resume, that they would get lots of details out of my resume that would come up in the output.
I'd be happy to do a test with somebody where, you know, we ask it a question about something, then we upload a bunch of data and we see if both myself and the other person get the new information now or not.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, I uploaded some information about when I built the world's largest glass of orange juice, and I did a query for that. And it came up with all sorts of information about the world's largest glass of orange juice. And it probably didn't get that back in 2021. So it got it from when I uploaded it to them. So this is what's going on here. These AI engines are being trained by our information. And I guess there needs to be some gate to what's private and what's not.
Rebecca, do we really have privacy on anything that we're doing?
I don't think so anymore.
I don't think so. Also, I want to keep my eye on the products that come out. So, you know, in light of like writer strikes and labor movements, etc. Like, what are the products that are coming out? Is there going to be an entrepreneurial coaching program called, you know, business in the flaw with like in the coaching style of Rebecca Gunter? I do all my coaching calls on Zoom. I write all my documents on Zoom. Like, will there be, you know, where they're gonna be blog posts in the style of Rebecca Gunter? Not that it's me, but I'm just using that as an example. So I want to keep my eye nefariously on like what's the products, because we have no idea what 5 years could bring, you know, what 5 months is going to bring, I think. So further argument for the AI constitution, Rob Greenlee.
Yeah, I mean, I think the concern is if you're a doctor and you're having, you know, appointments over Zoom, if you're an attorney, you know, discussing privileged information, if you're doing any sort of financial advising or any, all these things are supposed to be confidential, and are they or are they not? I don't know if they're confidential if you do them on the telephone, right? Somebody's listening to that too. But where is it least likely to cause trouble for you or the person you're working with? I don't know.
Yeah, and is the cat completely out of the bag on this?
Right.
Is there any putting it back in the bag? I really don't really see a real way that's going to fully happen again.
Yeah.
Right.
I want to say a quick hello. Live Podcast Media is here. Janine Payne is here. Great to see you, Janine. Durham Skywriter, Patricia A. Murray is here. And, of course, the Great Beauty Bubble is joining us. Thank you, everybody, for being a part of it. What do you think? Is Zoom safe? to use? Are they going to take our content and we're going to find it somewhere else, either through their AI model or some other type of repurposing? We shall see.
Is any place safe?
Well, let's oh, go ahead, Claudia.
Well, this is it. And this is what he was talking about. You could be at the library and the guy next to you has his computer or whatever. And you know, there's these ways that your phones could pick up all the data. Right. So, I mean, my takeaway just in an overall from reading this is with everything, just like you, Rebecca, I look at, okay, what's the goods that's going to come out of this? Okay. But where also do I need to be cautious? Okay, there's going to be platforms. AI is a real, it's a real thing. So all our platforms, every service thing we use, maybe even going into restaurants now, there'll be a disclosure whether you can opt in, opt out of something. And unless, from my understanding, unless you actually opt out of something, you're opted in. Rather than, hey, would you like to opt into this? So that was just a little bit of my takeaway, just like keep my eyes open, but also look at, hey, what could be developed through this? Where could be as entrepreneurs look at the bright side? And so we're not always freaking out going doom and gloom. You know, how can we make something creative out of this? How can we benefit from some of this? But then also my other takeaway was, Claudia, again, you don't know enough about some of this stuff. And not that you have to go into the deep into the rabbit hole with everything, but it's kind of good for you to kind of understand some of this. I didn't know about this whole other thing that he's talking about. And he's a developer. He's not just some guy writing a blog. So anyways, that's just it for me.
Interesting. So going along with this topic, Rob dropped in some information about Apple Pay. There was an article, 7 Reasons Not to Use Apple Pay. Rob, what are your thoughts on Apple Pay? And is that safe? Is that something we should be concerned about? Or is it more that Apple is, you know, their relationship with different apps and things that's really not part of Apple Pay, but it's just part of how Apple operates in the online ecosystem?
Yeah, I have just to say, I have my Apple Pay, you know, enabled, and I've used it. It's very convenient, and I think that's the key thing, is that you just put your credit card information in the Apple Pay wallet and you can just swipe your phone by things. Like I've taken all sorts of subways and buses in London just using my iPhone to pay for everything. And it's really easy and convenient. So Apple Pay is definitely a convenience that's growing in its importance in our world. But there are some, you know, like some of the things we were talking about earlier, that there are some compromises that exist around digitizing everything, right? And that's really what we're talking about here. And these 7 disadvantages to us with Apple Pay, if you look at it, and a lot of the same issues that we've been talking about is around privacy and around control of our money and handing over control over what we have access to and what we can do. And it's becoming less important to have cash in our pockets, which is an autonomous kind of independent payment platform that isn't connected up to a bigger network. So the number one on this list, on this article, is the vulnerability to cyber attacks. So, you know, that's kind of a broad statement, but generally Apple Pay is safe and secure system. You know, you're certainly not going to get your money stolen directly from you like you could cash in your pocket that might fall out of your pocket or something like that when you pull it out. But, you know, so there's vulnerability in everything, actually. But, you know, your phone can get maybe compromised, or jailbroken is a term that they use that makes that phone vulnerable to hackers getting in there and using your Apple Pay to pay for things. And then also if you use public Wi-Fi connections with your iPhone, also that leaves you open to vulnerabilities as well. But that vulnerability goes way beyond just Apple Pay. But that's one of the potential ones once you put your financial information in there. But that also includes banking information and all sorts of stuff that's in your phone. So there's lots of vulnerabilities on that side. And then the third one is the potential to bypass contactless limits without authorization. So I guess what this is Apple Pay's susceptibility to payment fraud via cards. And so that's one of the thing that it's so convenient that it can easily be hacked and used in a nefarious way. And that's kind of what that is. And the number fourth one is Apple collects a significant amount of personal data on you about your transactions, but that's generally going to be the case in our digital life going forward. So, you know, that's not a big surprise that once everything gets digitized, and we're clearly on the path to what was called a CBDC, which is a central bank digital currency. And then here, I think over the last week or so, the Federal Reserve has started what's called FedNow, which is basically running transactions through a central processor that's slowly but surely being removed from the banks like Bank America and Wells Fargo and stuff like that of handling these transactions. It's going through a central Fed kind of transaction engine. That's the first step towards a digital currency, which that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, and, I was going to say, Rob Greenley, there's a lot to FedNow.
Yeah, and then...
talk about a can of worms, bro. Yeah.
Right. And number five is Apple Pay only works on Apple devices. So it's not a cross-platform kind of capability. So those that have Androids or whatever can't really take advantage of this. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. And then it says number six is confusion and among new users about how it works and where it can be used and things like that as we shift over to that is going to cause, and then failed transactions due to a card crash. I had that happen just when I was paying for a parking lot with my credit card. It denied it for no reason. And then I used it to buy something else just a couple of minutes later and it went through. So they can easily, there's a potential there that transactions can be blocked for whatever reason, right? Or it can just fail, you know? So those are the main reasons that we should all be concerned about a platform like Apple Pay. But I'm using it, so, you know.
So it can't be all bad.
Well, it isn't that. It's just that the convenience of it is wonderful. And that gets back to what Claudia was saying earlier, is that there's always good sides to this technology. It's not that the technology itself is bad. I think all of us worry about the nefarious uses of the information and the potential control and limitations that can be applied if we're only using digital technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, my biggest concern, I don't think I'm that concerned about a lot of the issues that they raise. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm paying with a credit card, then my information, if I'm swiping the credit card instead of using Apple Pay, there's a trail of everywhere I'm going. And
well, and it's a good argument to say, well, what's really more secure? Is it giving that waiter your credit card, your physical credit card to take away? Or is it better to just pay with your iPhone to a little scanner there because you don't have to turn over control of your number directly to
Right. person. I mean, I started using it during COVID so that I wouldn't have to, you know, swipe the card and touch the screen and all that stuff. As far as like the concern about Wi-Fi, I tend to use just cellular connection when I'm in public
safer.
Places, not turn on my Wi-Fi on my phone there. So I mean,
never thought about that.
Yeah, because your phone on Wi-Fi at home. Yeah, I only access Wi-Fi at home. I try and not access Wi-Fi outside of the house. Yeah,
never occurred to me, you guys.
One of the things that I do when there's like you have to pay, you have to turn your location on because that's how it marks the actual stall that you're paying for. So you turn your location on. But I always turn, once I pay, I always turn the location off. Otherwise, that thing's going to track me wherever I go. It's just a security thing I use.
I always keep the location off unless I have to turn it on. I do like the allow once or whatever. But I'm pretty confident that from signal to tower, yeah, whatever, they know, they can probably trace my steps anyway if they want probably. Whoever they is.
Better not orchestrate any museum heists, Ross.
But I think that the part about going to a paperless currency, it speeds the process, and then the centralized digital currency. And so everybody just pays, has a chip in their phone or whatever, and they pay.
Or in their arm or in their hand. I saw a video last week that showed, you know, a younger woman that had one of those chips embedded in her palm. And all she had to do was wave her hand over the transaction machine at the store. God. And the transaction went through. She didn't even have to have a cell phone.
I mean, it's going to get to the point where they scan you when you walk in, and if you don't have enough money in your account to pay for the lowest cost item, they just like throw you right out the door there, and you can't get it.
Or what if you haven't? If you're behind on taxes, or you're defaulting on your student loan, or you owe child support, who turns?
Yeah, they'll just take it right out of your account.
or the people in power don't like what you said on X or Threads or something else. And then they go, okay, no access to your money.
That's right.
And or so you only if you get... have paper money, you always have another way to pay for things. If we go to a complete digital single currency, then, you know, those in power can turn it on and turn it off. They can decide who eats and who doesn't.
Yeah, I did see another report that came out about a guy that went into the bank and tried to withdraw $25,000 in cash, right, from the bank. And basically the bank staff kind of panicked because they didn't have enough money to give it to him. So, yeah. I mean, it's a big chunk of money, but it speaks to how
it's not
cash
that big.
Or,
what if 2,500 people came in and wanted $10? Right.
Well, same kind of issue, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, before we go on to the next topic, Janine has a question here. She says she signed up for Otter, Otter AI, and's running from it. It's developed speech-to-text transcription applications using artificial intelligence and machine learning. Its software called Otter shows captions for live speakers and generates written transcriptions of the speeches. I'm trying to figure out how it works. Are you familiar with it? I am. I use it when I'm just looking to get a transcription, say, of the show, but I'm not looking to edit video or audio in it. I will use Otter if I'm looking to edit the video and audio through text, then I'll use the script. But basically, you can take an audio file or video file and upload it, and you'll get a transcript that needs to be cleaned up. But that's one good purpose of it. The other is, I guess you can turn it on in meetings, and you could be having a conversation that you just want to record, not, you know, necessarily for, you know, a show or something like that, but just to, I want to record a speech or, you know, a class, lecture, or whatever. You can pretty much turn it on, and you'll get not only an audio recording, but a transcription of that talk. Is that how everybody else understands it?
Yeah, I haven't used Otter before, but I use a platform called Descript that does a lot of that same stuff too. It edits video and audio simultaneously by manually editing the transcript. So it actually will make all those, and then you can export it out. And you can also eliminate automatically all your ums and ahs and things like that from the video and the audio automatically. It's done within seconds, right? Doesn't matter how long your video is, they're all gone.
So the script is like kind of like Otter plus the editing.
Is it?
Okay. I would say.
Yeah, I haven't used Otter.
That's a lot of bells and whistles, man. I mean, they're coming out with something new for Descript every other day.
I know. Did you see the new one where it will actually change the position of your eye looking at the looking toward the camera? It's called eye contact.
So if you're not looking at the camera, now you are.
It'll actually change it in the video where your eyes are looking at the camera all the time.
Weird. Wow.
I mean, good. As a writer, okay. I would say
I don't have to look at the camera anymore.
I know. Just keep looking down and it'll, I mean, as long as you don't bend your head down too far, right? I mean, your eyes still need to be visible, but yeah.
And does it put your eyes like in a weird place? Like, that's so wild.
Supposedly it puts it right at the center of the video is what it
wow.
is what it's trying to do. So you're trying to get that eye contact thing going
on. It keeps them in your head though, right? Like, because you move your head
it
over
keeps them in
here,
your head. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't like move it up here.
Googly
or
eyes.
Like that, or
yeah, big, there, but the eye.
Big, googly
big
eyes.
Center eye that's looking at the camera, right? So
RB, it's like we're behind a painting in an old castle and we're like watching what's going on in her room.
Very good. Very good.
And then we're slowly being replaced, right? It's like, yeah. I mean, eventually we'll all be an avatar and it won't be us, really.
That's right.
So it'll be
The Matrix is real.
AR assistant.
Sorry. Right. I think one consequence of all this, or not a consequence, or one byproduct will be just the attunement of our bullshit meter. How quickly we'll be going to be able to identify what's an AI voice, what's not, what's AI generated copy, what's not, what's like, you know, where the eye gaze is kind of manufactured, what's not. We'll become so fine tuned with that, I think, which is interesting from human evolution standpoint.
Yeah, but will that last though? I mean, at some point it's going to get so good that you're not going to be able to tell. So
we are seeing the second social revolution in our lifetime. No other human being on this planet has ever experienced two social revolutions in a lifetime.
So true.
It is mind-bogglingly
on, trippy. On many levels, too, Rebecca. It's just not on the technology side. It's on the social.
No, it's a full social revolution. Right. From the green revolution to the industrial revolution to the information age to AI. And each time between is getting shorter and shorter and shorter.
And
the fact that right
bumpy.
Now.
It's going to get bumpy. I hope it gets better at some point, but it's definitely going to get bumpy on the way. There's no question.
It's going to be different.
Like that. It's hard. Yeah. It's
never be before have humans been in contact with as many people. Like, our networks are just huge. Wow. And the number of people, like, I mean, odds are the four of us wouldn't even know each other without, you know, live video and Zoom and StreamYard and all these different tools that we use and connecting on social media and so forth. And that's the good side of it. But also managing all these different online relationships and having so many people's information come into your feed and everything is not kind of how we used to go about living our lives. We were connected to the people we were in physical, you know, range from, and then, you know, maybe a phone call or something like that.
Yeah, like a
which
five
itself
or ten,
hasn't been around for ever.
Yeah, I mean, like a 5 or 10 mile range is about as far as we knew people. That's really right.
Exactly. And you know, go ahead, Rebecca. Sorry.
Apology. I heard an interesting commentary to that point about, you know, my beloved platform of TikTok, about how human beings, like our brain processing power to completely recontextualize every 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about that feed, it is a whole new perspective, a whole new point of view, a whole new voice, a whole new set of circumstances. You could be in a whole new place of the world. And then 3 minutes later, it's a complete and total paradigm shift. And you have to adjust to that. And then 3 minutes later, it's a complete and different paradigm shift. That we're just to be able to wrap your head around that constant, like, changing of the channels is a challenge for the human brain. And to acknowledge how much that's kind of demanding of just who we are as human beings.
Exactly. And that's exactly where I was going to go, Rebecca, is we are human at the end of the day. And how do we create that balance and keep that health for ourselves, because we have to. It's can be completely overwhelming, and also the way each of us are wired, different aptitudes on how we absorb all this and how we deal with it. And then how do we create healthy boundaries even with our clients online and relationships online that we're just coming to know they're not long-term relationships yet, but it just seems like all of a sudden, boom, you know, they're in your life, they're in your everything. And how do we do that? So yeah, the human factor,
the trust factor, the human, that's our new,
there's also the overload. Yeah. The overload of information. I mean, it used to be like you would get a newspaper, your local newspaper or whatever, and you'd go through some of the articles that day, look for what you're interested in. Now you could go and you want to look up something about health or whatever. You get 50,000 articles show up that have been written in the last 20 minutes or whatever. And it's like, all right, I could just get lost all day on this and what to believe and who to trust and where to go, you know.
So true.
Maybe we all need a mental upgrade.
Yeah.
I need a faster CPU up here. So
yeah, that's it.
It could be what Neuralink is going to give us is a faster CPU up here.
One of the things I do every quarter is I actually reevaluate everything. I look at everything from a bird's eye view. Just go, okay, Claudia, what has changed so quickly that your brain can't even, or even your keep business, up? Even you can't catch up on what do you need to pull back on? What can maybe not be tossed out, but what can be put on the shelf for now? Because at the end of the day, it's like, you know, there's not complete unlimited resources, both time and everything else. And so what do I need to chop away? I do that every quarter. I do that. Sure. I reevaluate too the new relationships that have come into my circle. And I go, okay, who's here to just troll? Who's here to add value? Who's here as just a looky-loo and really not for you, but against you? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think all those things are things that I try to weigh in. Again, the trust factor, right, Rob? Anyways, that helps
what
me.
I think
we're all getting...
Sorry, you guys.
Go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say it is about embracing transformation and seeing the positive aspects of change. So I'll just say.
And speaking of embracing change, our next topic, Rebecca.
That was a good lead-in. How'd you work that one out?
Like, I couldn't have even. And that's how I jumped all over you, Rob. I was like, if I don't get my mower right now, this segue is so perfect. For sure. I am really sharing. But please, Rob, what were you going to share?
Oh, I just think that over time we're going to have to, I think what's happening is bringing us as a humanity closer together. And my concern is that the AI is going to get in the way of that somehow. But increasingly we're all getting increasingly, I mean, this is how I feel in my life. I'm getting increasingly connected to more and more people around the world. And that's a little scary and it's a little overwhelming sometimes to be able to mentally handle that. But I do think that's, we're all becoming a little bit cyborg, right? Based on our connection to our devices and things like that. And those are augmenting our abilities to be global citizens. And that comes with, you know, some caveats to our privacy.
One day you will handle the volume by having our AI bot converse with their AI bot, and you know
exactly. I want my AI assistant to do all the grunt work.
I'll have my people call your people.
All I want to do is just do these shows, and then my AI bot can do all the emails and do it all of
exactly.
The grunt work.
Right. Yeah.
We're not too far off from that actually being true.
Right.
You could upload this transcript into Descript, and you could have, you know, or into ChatGPT and have them generate all the things for you. So you're not too far off.
No, we're not.
But can I trust my AI assistant? That's going to be the big question, to represent me in a positive way. So
God, does that sound like a future episode of the
It does trust sound factor, like a future episode of Trust Factor. It's a little ahead of its time, though, somewhat. Can I trust my artificial assistant? Yes.
It's meta. That is so meta.
I'm just looking at all the comments coming in. It's kind of cool to see everybody popping in here live. Always great to see the replay viewers, but it's always fun to.
Yeah.
So, hey, everybody. I just.
Thank you.
Yeah, we should pull some of the comments up and maybe we can talk about them. So.
Yeah. Rebecca?
Rebecca.
Oh, thanks. Rebecca segment. One thing I've noticed about our conversations here at Streaming Report, live every Thursday Eastern Standard Time at 1:30 every week, right? That's my little promo drop, indeed, is that a lot of the conversations we have are kind of baked a little bit in fear, at least from my standpoint, and being afraid of it. Like, I'm afraid that Google Docs is now going to eliminate creative writing by publishing our works mining it in and publishing our works. I'm afraid that Zoom is going to create a product that's like coaching in the style of Rebecca Kutcher. I'm afraid that Apple Pay is going to, create havoc in my family. I'm afraid that FedNow is going to turn off my access to money anytime it doesn't like what I'm doing. I will say that the human brain, from a neuroscience perspective, when it's in fear mode, it cannot innovate. They are mutually exclusive. Where fear happens in your lizard brain, all of the innovation and trying new things is turned off. So we spend a lot of time, I think, being afraid of change. It is scary, to your point of why it's changing so rapidly. Who can keep up? I can't negotiate every 3 minutes with a new perspective. I know so many friends, who's real, who's not. But Claudia illustrated it so beautifully of like taking that fear and turning it into embracing opportunities. And what can transformation do for us as entrepreneurs, or as just as people out here trying to navigate the world? And if you embrace that, and I'm saying don't distrust it, because obviously we need to bring critical thinking to the table. But instead of running like, when is AI going to take over my copywriting job, and then I'm going to be like dependent on Bank of America to go to the grocery store, and you just start to like mushroom cloud all of these possible futures in which you don't have a lot of kind of sovereignty and voice. But instead, I encourage folks to do what Claudia is illustrating, is to every 3 months I take stock and I reevaluate who my audience is and my efforts and what's happening. Embracing transformation can give you perspective. It can identify blind spots. It can show you opportunities you didn't know you had. It can help you kind of navigate the world in a way that doesn't feel as scary and as icky. So if we want to continue walking in innovation and kind of embracing change rather than being afraid of it, there's a lot of benefits there in terms of getting your faster, more efficient CPU brain power that you're looking for from Greenlee, and seeing the landscape from a different perspective, figuring out what doesn't serve you and cutting it out, identifying your core competencies, like seeing change as an opportunity. For transformation is an asset, or in the words of Littlefinger, chaos is a ladder. He says chaos isn't a pit, chaos is a ladder. And that the battle of climbing that ladder is the journey itself, and that's how we can truly live our most, I'm contextualizing, I'm editorializing now that speech, but I think that chaos is a ladder, and that's our chance to really grow and change as human beings. So while all this stuff is scary, I'm encouraging us to flip our mindset and embrace transformation as a catalyst for growth.
So good.
Right, Ross? Get into it.
Well, I mean, I certainly, when social media started, I put my head in the sand and was like, I'm not going to do this. It wasn't until...
Oh my God, and look at you now!
I know. It actually wasn't until 2012 that I started using social media. Like, I started a LinkedIn account in early 2012. So, the beginning parts of that, I'm never going to do this. And then, okay, well, I guess I will start because it's a professional platform and whatever. And then, I got sucked into the rest of it. And, but my point is that, like, there's a lot of, you can't just put your head in the sand and say the next thing that comes along, I can avoid completely. I mean, there's people who can avoid social media and the web and so forth because they're far enough along in their career and they're doing some type of job that doesn't require them to have any online presence, and they're maybe close enough to retirement whereby they won't have to apply online for another job or what have you. But for the most part, having some sort of ability to use social media and different online tools is now pretty much essential for anyone who wants to participate in the economy in some way as an employee, a business owner, consultant, whatever it is you want to do. So I think that when we look at how much things are changing quickly, we embrace change, but there's also the aspect of being a little skeptical, which, you know, you mentioned being fear-based, because there's so many different things you could chase after. You know, how many times has something new come along, like a new app or something, and everybody go, oh, I'm going to get on that, and that's where it all is. And then 6 months later, everybody's like, wow, that was a waste of time. So knowing what trends and what new technology isn't going to feed your business or help your business can be as important as embracing other new ones, knowing not where not to waste time. I think we only know that through trial and error most of the time, but that's one of the things that I think we have to look. Some of it's evaluating, like, is this worth my time? Is this going to help my business? Is this going to give me more enjoyment in my life if I spend more time on Threads, or is Threads a waste of time? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, not being afraid of the future does sound like a quality of life upgrade, so I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. And for me too, I look at things, you know, when I first jumped on social media, I wasn't jumping up and down to do it. My managers were like, you need to get on social media. You need to get on. And they would scope my accounts. You haven't posted anything on Facebook yet. You know, and so I had to develop those disciplines if I wanted to get to where we were heading. Okay. So I had to cooperate. And then too, the other thing I found was that some things that I did embrace, I probably wouldn't have the level of relationship that I do with my audience, because they're on it. And if I don't know what the heck, you know, a Twitter is or an IG is, I have no connection. Do you know what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I look at things that are bigger than Claudia is and go, okay, where is my market, and how, what are they looking into? What are they, you know, some of them are all into this Barbie movie. I haven't even seen that thing. You know, at my last shows, I wore like this pink thing with my black rock leather jacket. People were calling me rock and roll Barbie. I'm like, oh my gosh, like really? I don't know if that's an insult or a call. You know what I'm saying? Like, anyways, I guess also to be able to communicate and to understand their world. So I don't need to just understand Claudia. I need to look beyond that. I need to look beyond Claudia. So that's kind of my mindset sometimes too. In the entertainment world, there have been amazing acts like Tina Turner, like, you know, and us as artists, like I'm an artist where I release my own music, but I also do shows that are covers. Okay. I'm saying this for a reason. AI is almost like a cover of Rob or Ross. Okay. Also, we do things called tribute acts. Okay. What that does is it actually helps distribute the original act. It helps keep that alive. It helps the audience buying their product. It helps. Do you see what I'm saying? There's mm-hmm. opportunity there. So, you know, the AI might create AI, Claudia. I don't know, but, you know, hey, all the power to them, you know, if they distribute it and they, you know, anyway, I digress. But I'm just saying, again, going back to Rebecca's points is to look for the opportunities and the things that that may grow us as entrepreneurs and as human beings.
Tribute bands are fascinating to me, Claudia. I saw Almost Queen two summers ago, and I was like kind of on this like existential crisis of why do I not think that this is valid or legitimate? These guys look like Queen. They sound exactly like Queen. The audience is responding to them like Queen. And yet part of me is skeptical. Like, these are somebody's grandpas. You know, like, that's what I'm thinking. But there's for no reason. Because they're creating an experience that is, like, almost a carbon copy. And I really had to think. And I still don't know the answer. Like, what is real? What is not real? Do I need air quotes? Why am I not enjoying this like I'm seeing Freddie Mercury when it's exactly note for note and move for move the same thing?
So from an artist's point of view, this is what we get from the audience. Oh my God, I am so glad that you've done this because they're not touring anymore.
That's what my friend said.
We don't get to see them anymore. And this is the thing. This is what we hear, Rebecca. My boyfriend proposed to me at this concert way back when. It takes them back to a time of life where they have amazing memories. They're reliving some stuff.
Yeah.
And as a tribute to, sometimes when we do covers or tributes, we also are putting our spin on it. It's not the exact same thing because we can never be the exact same thing.
I would
think I heard. Sorry, Drew.
Go ahead, Rebecca.
I was going to say, that's my friend who took me. That's what he kept saying is like, I never had a chance to see Queen. And now I have this chance to, it's like VR. It's like being in a VR concert. Mm-hmm. People responding the exact same way. Yeah. So for me, I had to really examine like what is real, what is not real, what's valid, what's not valid. And it kind of shook me existentially to see a tribute band. So thanks for bringing that up. I think it's pertinent. Ross, sorry to step on you.
No. I would think, Claudia, with a cover, if people like the artist that they're watching version of it, they would then buy, you know, a CD or download music from the artist who's covering it. But with a tribute band, they probably so enjoy it, they go buy, like, Queen's original albums or something. Yep. And so Queen makes some money off of that, or, you know, downloads or, you know, download tracks or whatever it is.
It's a win-win. And really at the end of the day, it takes people to an experience. And when I train with a stage coach in Nashville who trains like the stars out there, that, and his big thing is always, Claudia, we have to leave people with an experience, because otherwise they can just buy a DVD or a CD and stay at home. But when they come to a show, you got to understand, you got to put yourself in their space. They've had a hard week. Maybe some of them got diagnosed with terminal illness. Maybe some of them recently got divorced. Maybe some, life is hard. And people come to a show, they go to a movie, they go for an experience, they go to get the feel goods, they go to remember things. So with AI, turning this all back around again, that's part of what I look at. And I go, well, hey, you know what? Here's some opportunities. Like, this could be cool. You know, what kind of products will come out of this? Mm-hmm. If there was no tribute bands out there, a whole lot of agents, a whole lot of casinos would never have work. They'd be shut down. They'd be a lot of theaters wouldn't be selling tickets. It generates a lot of work all around. So it's all good.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one thing to this too. I think to add a little deeper perspective on it, I think that the problem that I think we face with AI technology and change and all that stuff like that is people, like you said, people are fearful of change of any type that's maybe makes them feel uncomfortable and takes them down a mental path that they don't understand or think that somehow is dangerous to them because they don't understand it. And so I think we are living in this world of fear when it comes to change. When in actuality, and I've been you know, part of this journey with the internet and the web and the growth of technology since, you know, the 90s, and have seen how this has transformed our world. And there's always good sides and there's bad sides to the transformation that happens. But I think on a whole, I think that a lot of the change has been positive. And it's brought people together on a global basis now, like it has never been the case before. I know it's opened up my world to, and I do calls with people in Europe and Asia and Australia and stuff all the time now. So it's, that was certainly never the case when I was growing up, you know, when prior to the internet and things like that. So there are good sides to this. And I think if more people thought about this stuff as a positive thing and a good thing that we can use to help all of us, and less, because there's always a certain amount of people out there that want to use this to their advantage, right? Instead of using it for good, they tend to use it to get advantage or to, you know, extort, you know, from people, or to, there's always criminals out there that are always trying to use this technology in a nefarious way. And that's what kind of spoils it for all of us, because I don't think that high of a percentage of people out there are really interested in using technology in a nefarious or evil or bad way. But there's always that, you know, 2% out there that have an interest in doing that, that kind of, you know, brings us all to like question this. So normally we shouldn't question what Zoom is doing. But since there's not a lot of trust that's out there, and we haven't really put forth, like I've been talking about, this AI constitution where we all have these basic rights, that has not been communicated, and that the government and entities really don't feel like they have a lot of motivation to make any changes like this to really respect the users, because I do think that there's an interest to take advantage of us all. And that's unfortunate that's our world today, but that is a reality that we all have to be skeptical of and be looking over our shoulders, while at the same time, you know, looking at this as an opportunity too.
Yeah, I think a lot of skepticism comes from the fact that while these tools are awesome, a lot of the big tech companies told us, oh, your data is secure until it was breached. Or, hey, we don't keep your photos on our server until the photos escaped and we're all over the internet. We don't, you know. So
it's all about money. It's all about money. And that's
in the early days, we weren't hip to the fact that, like, okay, basically when I download this app and I give them carte blanche to, you know, go about my phone, that they can see everything on my phone, basically, you know, that they can get all this data that you just thought, oh, okay, sure. I just drop the app on my phone and I log in and I use it and I close it and that's all. But it's not the case. And maybe it's not a big deal, but still, the fact is we don't trust what's going on because they haven't been transparent with us about how they make decisions. Yeah. And also, there's very rarely, unless you're somebody famous or you're in the government or something like that, there's very rarely a person you can appeal to if, say, your YouTube channel were to get shut down or, you know, you're...
Yeah.
I mean, I had a case where my Facebook, I couldn't post certain things on Facebook because I had posted a YouTube Shorts and it said there was, you know, nudity or something in it. I can guarantee you I've never posted nudity online at all. And in fact, I had posted the same damn short video as a reel on Instagram and as on YouTube, but somehow Facebook thought, you know, I don't even think there were people in the damn thing when I posted it. Really, it was like, you know, or clip from a show like this. But anyway, my point being, but there's no human that you can appeal to. There's no customer service at Facebook I can call up and go, Hey, you want to take a look at that video and tell me where you think the nudity is? Because it's just a talking head video, but thank you.
Especially when I think corporate, you know, folks are saying the quiet part out loud all the time in a way that we've never seen before. Oh, well, you know what people who don't want to go back to work in the office need? They need a good, healthy recession. When you can see clips from like CEOs and things, again, from Zoom meetings, et cetera, who are talking about profiteering and wealth extraction, my God, of course you're going to be like, you're right. There's nobody we can appeal to. We just feel so
powerless. Who can you call,
sometimes.
Right? Who can you call? Yeah. It's not just the Ghostbusters anymore. So
you know, it's funny as we're all talking, I just got a picture of like wildlife, the ecosystem and wildlife.
Yeah.
And how there's predators there. And these predators sometimes are like the big lion or whatever, you know, that's got the big fangs and everybody can see all
yeah,
them.
Or the sharks or whatever.
The sharks or whatever. Yeah. But it or sometimes that little teeny scorpion that is deadly, probably deadlier than the shark. You know what I'm saying? Like, so right. In an ecosystem, each one plays a part. And if one of them goes extinct, it kind of sets things off balance. And it's kind of like mm-hmm. this here, too. It's like we have this the economic ecosystem with all this tech. And, you know, one feeds off the other, just like I was talking about the tribute acts. Like if I'm putting on a tribute act, I go out and spend money on a wig, on wardrobing, I outfit all my musicians on charts. And it feeds that economic ecosystem in the entertainment world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's kind of the same thing here. And again, going back to what Rebecca was saying in all this, that we don't be afraid of it. We see the opportunities, but then Ross is bringing that balance of wisdom. Okay. But we've also got to look at the stuff that might be that predator. Cause I'm not going to go and give a cookie to that lion out. He's going to bite my head off. Right. Right.
Hey, you have to be smart. You have to be smart and avoid those predators. Right. And that's right. Kind of what we're all doing. That's our natural reaction.
But without that, we don't have a healthy ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. And I think that's yeah. where sometimes this shift is happening. And
mm-hmm.
All right, let's do our last topic. This is going to be kind of a quick one. I'm going to go around to everybody with two questions. So here's the topic. Elon Musk had a tweet and said, basically, if you've been hurt at work, you've been fired or what have you, for something that you posted on X or Twitter, that he'll, Twitter X, will provide you money, I guess, if you want to sue your employer or fight back or whatever, they're there to support you financially so that people shouldn't get in trouble for what they say on Twitter. So two questions for everybody. One is, do you believe he's really going to do this? And if you do, are you now freed up? Do you feel freed up to say whatever you want? Damn the consequences. Because if somebody drops you, you got Twitter in your corner with a lot of cash and you can take them to court or whatever. Rebecca, we'll start with you.
I believe if the answer is, will he do it? Will he not? It's a conditioned yes. I think that he could easily do it for a few very well handpicked PR moments, if not necessarily for everybody. And do I feel more free? Hey, man, I'm a live streamer. I can say whatever I want, whatever platform I want. I'm not going to cancel because I own the means of production. So that's the lesson.
Rob?
Yeah, I think he really kind of played into the narrative of X being a free speech platform. So he was standing behind his proclamation by making this claim. And I did hear a few other people say, well, what if I didn't get a job because of things that I posted on Twitter? Not so much that I lost my job, but I get a job because I was too outspoken or said the wrong thing on the platform. So there, you know, this is a little bit of opening a Pandora's box for Elon. But it does make some controversial headlines for him, and that plays into the brand that he's trying to build.
Buddy.
Yeah, I think he'll do it. And he's probably developing another app or something to go along with it. Elon's not stupid, just like Zuck. They're like probably 10, 20 years ahead of us. So, you know, right. I just think that way. And then the other thing is, yeah, one of my things again would be like, okay, what shyster is going to try to take advantage of this? And, you know, and that's a whole other animal that he's going to have to deal with. So all the power to you, Elon. Good luck.
Well, there's a lot of people.
Some people will try, because that's just how they think. They have criminal minds. They'll try to get money out of Elon by, I don't know, faking accounts, doing some kind of weird shyster type thing.
I mean, I think the standing up for free speech in terms of like political speech and people shouldn't be ruined because they have an opinion on issues of the day and things like that, I'm all for that. I do think there are reasons why things that people say on Twitter should get them fired, not the cancel culture way that people are getting fired. But if somebody puts a business secret, you know, a trade secret out, if, you know, if I had an employee that put my address on Twitter or X or whatever, yeah, I'd have every right to fire them. Like,
or bitch about the company. I see that a lot.
Yeah, or put something out like, you know, giving our competitor our trade secrets or something. Like, yeah, there are reasons why that have nothing to do with, you know, issues of free speech for the public, you know, the public good kind of thing. But where people do things that harm their employer and going against agreements. Now, you could say people can harm their employer by speaking unpopular opinions and things, but I do think we have, I do like that he's standing up for having a sort of a public town square where we can discuss controversial issues and people don't get fired. I think that's different than people, you know, like I say, disclosing business secrets and saying things that they shouldn't be saying to betray the trust of their employer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you were to sue your employer, you would certainly never get that job back. You probably lose any potential job you have in the future too. So that's
why did you leave your last job? Here.
Are you going to need to get a big payoff on this in order to make it worthwhile?
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Okay. Recently, there was that whistleblower too that you know, about all the government, the aliens, and all that, and they just released his medical records, and you know, there's all these people talking about it on Twitter, and so at what point, you know, if you work for the government, then, or I mean, I know probably isn't now, but I'm just using him as an example. Like, say you're working for the government. I mean, I come from a country where there was a civil war. If you said anything contrary to the new government that took over, mm-hmm. Your family was axed. You know, there was no free speech. So that's communism, right? So, so you know, with this, Twitter and Elon saying this about employers, well, is he saying this about the government as well? And whoo, here we go.
Yeah.
Because the government can censor things if they want. I mean, in the country I came from, that happened overnight. I didn't have a vote on that. And every media channel was all new government propaganda. So anyway, so I find it interesting that he did this, because this would cover government as well, I would think. Or, mm-hmm. does government rule and dictate social media channels?
That's a whole nother joke, Claudia.
Yeah. Government's not supposed to dictate free speech,
right?
To limit speech. And so that's I think, where he's been most effective in changing the culture at Twitter/X is...
Yeah.
Not allowing the government to have a veto over what people can say and can't say.
So playing devil's advocate in the country I came from, which was Chile, in 1973, there was an overthrow. There was a coup, a military coup, and they overtook the government overnight. They killed the president and they took over. So it prior to that, there was free speech. There was, you could fly in and out of the country. The minute that happened, there was no free speech. Everything got shut down. So, you know, just playing devil's advocate here in using that as an example. How do we know that that couldn't just happen?
Here, right. It could happen here. And I would say that we're on course to having that happen here at this point.
I agree with Rob Greenlee.
In Canada, I don't get the news on Facebook anymore.
And technology is enabling government and corporations to enforce their guidelines around free speech. And yeah, that's
the Canadian government's been pretty bold in doing that.
Mm-hmm. Took a stand, yeah.
And also canceling bank accounts to people that spoke out against the government, right? So
there goes those FedNow accounts, Rob Greenlee.
Well, that's the danger of them centralizing control, is that they can do that, right? Before, they weren't really able to do that because the banking system was decentralized. But once it's centralized and connected, and everything is connected to it, even your personal shopping accounts at the nearest grocery store could be uploaded to the network, so they know how much meat you're buying, how much, you know, this and that that you're buying, and they could say, "Sorry, your allotment of meat is up for this week." So
I agree. I'm down that rabbit hole with you 100%. You do need to be on TikTok. That's what we're doing over there.
It is. Taking them down.
There you go.
Well, that's going to be a podcast consumption platform here soon. So TikTok, right?
All right. Since you brought it up, I have to ask now. How do we get our podcasts on TikTok? And is anybody listening to audio on?
Yeah, it hasn't been ruled out yet. But what they plan on doing is enabling TikTok to ingest your RSS feeds into their platform and have it be a companion option to any videos that you publish on the platform. But they clearly have their target set on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. So, and probably to some degree, X to some degree, as they are also talking about having more podcast related stuff on their platform.
So, and video as well, right?
Well, really, video is where they're really putting the energy right now. There's no question. Right. On X. Right.
Should we be uploading this video when we're done to X, or is it too long for X?
As far as I know, they, from what I heard, I think they have a 1 gig upload limit right now, but there has been requests that have made publicly to Elon to up that to like 5 gigs. So you could put a longer form content on X.
I'll just upload the 720 version.
I mean, you can try it and see if it accepts it, but you know, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if Elon at least maybe ups it to 2.5 or 3 or something like that at some point.
Cool. Right. Cool. Well, a lot going on. We'll have a lot of exciting topics to talk about next week. Claudia Santiago, Rob Greenlee, Rebecca Gunter, and Ross Brand, thanks so much for being a part of the Stream Leader Report live panel. And it's been great to see all these comments in the chat. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again next week for another episode of the Stream Leader Report live panel, 1:30 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. Take care, everybody.